think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr, my co-host, Rob Rojas,
my trusted co-host, Ben the Machine. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 216 of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we start year 6 in podcasting on this show, a great milestone. Also capped off with our 1,000th follower on Twitter, something we forgot to mention last week. We also want to wish a very happy birthday to our very good friend, Miss Kay Murray, who celebrates her birthday today. Back into football, though, Ziggy Schmidt steps down today from the head coaching position of the LA Galaxy and is replaced by Dominic Kinnear. LA currently stands 3 points out of a playoff spot and is winless in their last 6 matches. Can they get this turned around in time to make the MLS playoffs? UEFA Nations League has kicked off as an alternative to the boring old friendlies that we normally see. Do you like it, or is it just another money grab? And it's been 11 months since Bruce Arena has stepped down as the U.S. men's national team head coach, and we still don't have a permanent solution. What are we waiting for? We're going to discuss this and much more with former U.S. soccer presidential hopeful and U.S. soccer Hall of Famer, Mr. Eric Winalda, who will be joining us in about 15 minutes. Let me get my co-host in here for season 6, year 6 of Low Limit Football, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
Season 6, wow. I hope we're going for season 7, hopefully, for the next few years. I mean, I want to have a good box set by the time this is over, isn't it?
Did you ever think we'd get to 6?
No, yes. Yes, I did.
I was like, maybe, you know, but you know, it's been fun. You know, we've had a good time doing the show, and I see no reason to stop, so I say we just keep going.
Yep, keep going until the end of time, basically.
I'll do it, man. So the UEFA Nations League kicked off this week. What do you think so far of this tournament? Is it what you expected? Is it a little flat? Is it a little exciting? What's your take?
I mean, it's confusing, that's for sure. I mean, certainly it's different because, you know, you look at a different competition. But for me, I think it's great because you see all these teams, you know, compete in the same league. You know, obviously it's kind of the promotion relegation that they have there. You know, it's separated by, I believe, 4 leagues, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So it's like separated between 4 groups of 4. And yeah, I mean, it increases, 4 groups of 3. So yeah, I mean, it increases competition. You know, you can see, for example, Italy, obviously not off to the great start, but, you know, had a good game. Sorry, are in a good group with Portugal and Poland, 2 tough teams. And you look at teams like France, Germany, and the Netherlands in one group, Spain, Croatia, England, and another. So yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of it. I'm certainly tempted to see how this will fare out in time for the Euro qualification, because I think that's how it's going to be ultimately served, I believe, for like the Nation League's final or something summer.
Right, exactly. There's the cool thing about this competition is there's a path to the Euros from it. So some people are criticizing it, and I know this is a topic we're going to talk about in a little while, but some people are criticizing it because, you know, nobody wants the Azerbaijans or the Liechtensteins of the of the world in this tournament or in the Euros. They think it will water it down. Like many look at the 48-team World Cup and say, you know, it'll water down or it'll get watered down. But at the same time, you know, it seems like people are enjoying this. You know, maybe it's time to expand the Euros to a 32-team tournament, given the amount of good teams that we have in Europe. You know, it might just be, yeah, we're going to end up with, like you said, you know, maybe a Belarus in the final, you know, in the Euro finals. But at the same time, you're going to end up getting your Italy's, you're going to get your Netherlands. You're still going to get all your big, big teams, whether they get through on this path or they don't. So, you know, I feel part of the money grab, but at the same time, I prefer that there's a little more sauce in this. You know what I mean? Where it's not just a boring friendly. Because I gotta tell you, you know, something else we'll look at later on tonight is the U.S. Brazil game. Rob, it felt flat to me. You know what I mean? There was no venom in it, and you know, you could even see that in the fact that there was only 30,000 people in MetLife to see this Brazilian national.
Well, that's a whole different story as to why that's the reasons. But I totally get it, especially given the fact that Brazil was at full strength, basically.
Right, exactly. So let's jump into the trivia question, Rob, real quick, and then we'll do our opening thoughts topic. I know that we got a little sidetracked there. But our trivia question tonight is in honor of our guest, Mr. Eric Winalda. Eric was elected to the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in 2004, Rob. Who was he inducted with?
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to give you it's three names, two men, one woman. And one of them was the captain of the U.S. men's national team for the World Cup qualifiers in 1990. I'm going to give you all of that as hints.
Okay. Right. I'm probably not going to get it right, but I'll try my best.
No, we'll get to it at the end of the show. Yeah, it's definitely not a soft question, but so let's talk opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And tonight's opening thoughts topic surrounds, you know, or is based around the coaches meeting that happened recently, where UEFA was considering removing the away goals rule. They're talking about removing that because they wanted to see more of it as an aggregate goal, you know, to advance through the Euros, to the Champions League, that sort of thing. So I want your take on this, Rob. I mean, I know I've been thinking about this for a few days, and I do want your take on it because I think it's an interesting topic, you know, to kind of dive into a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's certainly something that I guess for both of us, you know, we watched European competitions like the Champions League, Europa League, or even in South America, like the Libertadores or the Sudamericana, where, you know, they have that away goal rule up until the final. You know, obviously in two different situations, one being a single final, and one being two finals. Yeah, I mean, I guess the romantic would like to see it not be abolished because it just adds to that more drama and the idea of how an away goal, you know, basically, you know, counts double in an event of a tie. But, you know, I think for taking it out, I mean, obviously a goal is a goal. And I think it should matter. I don't think it should matter where you're playing. You know, it doesn't matter if you're playing at the San Siro or at FC Barcelona's, Camp Nou, or at some stadium in, I don't know, Basel, Copenhagen, or Baku in Azerbaijan. I think a goal is still a goal. But I think just because of this being a two-legged tie, I think that's why it's much more important. Because, you know, for instance, if you're down 2-1 and you're away, that gives you a slight advantage to just score one over there at home. And then, you know, and it changes the way teams are going to play. Obviously, if it's 2-1 normally and, you know, you obviously need a goal to score or you need two goals to advance rather than just one to advance, then you're obviously going to play a different style. That's what I'm trying to get here when it comes to this away goal rule. For me, I don't think it should be necessary to take it away. I still believe that having the away goal rule is something very interesting. You know, I think the only time that you don't see it for a second leg, if I'm not mistaken, is for the MLS Cup playoffs. I mean, in Libertadores, the one thing I will say, though, is that when there is extra time, that away goal rule should be abolished. That I agree 100%, that the away goal should not happen. Or, if that's the case, and maybe, Joe, you obviously will go against this, as we talked about this a couple days ago, I think that after 90 minutes, should a game be tied, that it should go straight to penalties, because I think that would just, you know, make the game quicker, but obviously, you know, add to the drama that it should be. I'm for one or the other. I think if there is extra time, I don't want that away goal rule to be applied as we see in the Champions League and the Europa League. It's fine to play extra time, that I don't mind. I would rather have that, where you play the extra time but have no away goal rule, or you go straight to penalties after 90 minutes or 120 minutes if there is a tie after two legs and play penalties. That's one or the other for me would be suited for such of these games.
All right, so for me, I'm throwing the penalty thing out. I you know how I feel about deciding championships, deciding trophies from the penalty spot. I hate it. I've always hated it. You know, I get the excitement, but for me, I would rather have the teams just completely play it out and just play until somebody scores a goal. I would prefer a golden goal in that regard, okay? Now, I've been giving some thought to this whole away goal rule, and I think, you know, I'm going to take, for example, let's say Juve-Barca, right? Because both places are going to be tough to play in, okay? If you go to the J Stadium or the Allianz Arena and you go to the Nou Camp in Barca, they're both tough places for a road team to come into. So, for example, you know, Juve goes to Barcelona, loses to Barca 3-2 at the Nou Camp, right? The return leg comes back to Juventus, to Turin, and Juve wins that match 1-0. So 3-3 aggregate. Juve scores two away goals, though, okay? In that instance, I think it's totally fine. I think for the road team to go and score those away goals, I think is very difficult, especially in some places. Like, for example, to go to Galatasaray and play in Turkey. Yeah, good luck, right? I mean, never mind, you're going to have to deal with the pitch. You're also going to have to deal with the fans. There's all kinds of things you have to deal with.
But just, I'm just asking in this sense. I mean, wouldn't it still matter? Because, you know, a goal is a goal, you know, that kind of, you know, cliche in that sense.
Well, this is where I get to the other part where a goal is a goal. After 180 minutes, so after the two legs, okay, if the two teams are tied, let's say they tied 1-1 at Barca and 1-1 in Turin, right? Then I think when they go to play the additional, you know, the overtime, the extra time at the end of the 180, the golden goal rule gets thrown out. Okay? At that point, you just score a goal, and a goal is a goal. Okay? You've already proven that these two teams are equal, right? 1-1 and 1-1. I mean, I don't know that you can get any more equal than that, right? So for me...
0-0.
Well, yeah, 0-0 and 0-0. But for example, yeah. Okay, so look at it that way. 0-0... at the Nou Camp, 1-1 in Turin, then Barca should go through. Because it's tough to go into Italy and score a goal. You know, especially let's say they were playing at the Olympico against Roma. Okay. Right. The very tough spot to play. Go to Naples and play there. That's a tough spot. So, but at the end of 90 minutes, I'm sorry, at the end of 180 minutes, if both teams have proven equal, then for me, I think yes, a goal is a goal. At that point, you know, and I don't think it's fair. Because for me, I've always felt like the home team in the second leg is penalized, Rob. Yep. Because if all of a sudden it's 0-0 Barca, 0-0 in Barcelona, 0-0 in Turin, and then all of a sudden we start playing and Messi scores a goal, you know, Juve shouldn't have to score two to advance. But right now, as the rules stand, I think that's the way it is. So I think for me, there is a slight modification to the rule for me would be beneficial. I think you still have, and in the end, you practically have a golden goal at that point, right?
Yep.
And I like the golden goal. I think sometimes, you know, the ball is round and it's unlucky, and it is what it is. But an 80-85% opportunity to put the ball in the back of the net in a penalty spot, I don't think is as sporting. Okay. You know, because there's so many things. Like I said, the ball could bounce funny. Somebody gets injured. You just run out of gas. Whose fitness level is higher? These are all things that I think should play into the medal of a champion. And that's just, you know, my two cents on what they should do. So if you're listening to the show either live or if you listen to it in the broadcast and you want to voice your opinion, you know, feel free to tweet us at Low Limit Football and let us know what you think about the away goals rule and if they should abolish it or if they should modify it or they should just leave it as status quo and we'll try to, you know, get to your posts and respond as best we can. So Rob, with the opening thoughts in the rearview mirror here, I'm going to see if I can get our guest in, if that's all right. So let me go ahead and get to my dial pad and let me get my information here ready. So, very excited to be able to get him onto the show tonight, especially after, actually, where is my thing here? Right after our show last week to be able to get him on, I think has been fantastic. So, You just have to bear with me 1 second. I have to prepare this because the last time we dialed anything, Rob, was when we actually called Paraguay.
Yes, so, not so many
times. That's right. So I was set up on the Paraguay extension code. So let's see. If you just bear with me 1 more second. Okay, so let's see if we can add him into the call here. And Rob, I still have you at the moment, right?
Yes, you do.
So hopefully joining us on Low Limit Football is U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer and presidential candidate Mr. Eric Winalda, also previous host of Winalda Talks Football on Sirius XM, which is a show that I greatly miss. But we'll have to see if we can connect him here quickly and get talks. I can't wait because so many questions, especially watching that USA Brazil.
Oh, it's been forwarded. Automatic voice message system 80.
So we'll have to try him again in a second. But watching that Brazil US game, obviously a bunch of young guys in the match. You know, no Christian Pulisic. Rob, if you want to give me your 5 seconds of that that match before I'm going to try to call Eric again.
Well, I mean, I didn't see the entire game, so I can't really analyze it at a more deeper, thought of it. But, having seen the two goals that they scored, the penalty, obviously the foul is definitely questionable. I don't think it should have been called, but certainly, you look at how calls have been called recently. But fair play to Neymar for trying to get that goal. And then obviously the first one, Douglas Costa obviously just, outpaced.
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice.
We're gonna give it another minute, and then we'll give Eric another call. To get to back to that Douglas Costa,
the Firmino goal, the assist,
the first one. I felt bad for Anthony Robinson because he just over pursued Costa by literally one to maybe two steps, and it was enough for Douglas Costa, a player of his skill, to be able to just turn and go and ultimately get that nice ball into Firmino. Credit to Costa to play such a nice ball in, and credit to Firmino to finish it, because it's not an easy finish. But just a fantastic goal. It was very, very pretty to watch, and he made the youngster pay for it. But I think it was amazing to see how many kids on this roster were literally kids, 20, 19. You had Shaq Moore in this team. You had Weston McKinney. You had obviously Anthony Robinson was 20. Missing a few players, and you're missing players like Josh Sargent. You're missing players like like Christian Pulisic, who we talked about a couple seconds ago. So to have them field such a young team was pretty amazing, Rob. Now that you've obviously got the big matchup against Mexico coming up tomorrow night, what do you expect? What do you expect out of the Americans moving forward in this one?
I mean, I think. It's obviously going to be a very important game given the history between both these teams. What I do want to see, obviously, I think Mexico obviously are also in more of a revamping, rebuilding process, I would say. I think they only have, if I'm not mistaken, maybe one or two players that all play in outside of Mexico. And that's Osvaldo Anís that plays Oviedo and Jonathan Dos Santos at LA Galaxy. All the rest of the players do play in Mexico and are very young as well. So it's kind of a similar situation as well to what the United States is trying to do. I mean, obviously, I think the big, headlines are going to be definitely going to, if he does play this game, into Jonathan Gonzalez, because obviously, given the storylines that have been happening to him, obviously American-born, switched, having played as a youth for the United States and then switching to Mexico on the first team, I think that's going to be something interesting to see. But I think the United States needs to definitely, try to get a result as good as they can. Of course, a win would be great. I think both these teams are capable of showing a good game. I think we're definitely going to see a lot of rawness from a lot of these players. Obviously, you mentioned the young players like Timothy Weah, Tyler Adams, Julian Green. You look at DeAndre Yedlin, Shaq Moore, Anthony Robinson. There's so many young players as well on this team that I feel that you're going to get some of that rawness. And it's not going to be perfect. Maybe it's not going to be pretty. But certainly I think what they should do is try to get the best step into getting a good result and demonstrating that they're all that they can get a decent result and build from there. Because certainly that's all you can do, really. Just build yourself from these friendlies and move on from there.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point. I think a lot of the headlines are going to circle around the fact that Jonathan Gonzalez is going to be is on this team. I know we don't know if he's going to start yet or not, but I think people are going to, you know, I think it's going to be a talking point, a serious talking point with the broadcast when that comes on tomorrow night. So it'll be interesting to see if the kid makes the pitch, you know, because he's actually been, by all reports, not playing nearly as well in Mexico as he had initially started out with. So we'll have to see if he can get that turned around and moving in the right direction. And we'll have to see if Tuca Ferretti's going to, you know, take a shot with him and play him against the Americans. These are, you got to remember, these are kids that he's worked with and you know, probably played with in the youth divisions, right? In the lower teams. So these are all teammates to him. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that aspect of it, because you know that all the spotlight is going to be on him if a kid hits the pitch. So, you know, how does he handle that? How does he handle looking across at a kid like Tyler Adams, somebody that he's played with on the U19s or something like that? And you know, it's his buddy. I mean, you kind of saw it a little bit with Timothy Weah and Neymar, you know, in the Brazil game against the United States the other night. So, but I think with Jonathan Gonzalez, I think it's going to have a little more weight to it. You know what I mean? Maybe some of these kids that he's playing against feel that they consider him a traitor, which is certainly possible.
I mean, that's a whole different story to talk about, but I mean, it's his decision in the end, mind you. But you know, there are certain people that do believe that he is a traitor. But, I mean, we talked this at full, but it's his decision in the end. He's the one making the choices for his career, and if he feels happy for that, then by all means,
you know, my interest is more of what do his opponents think of him, right? Mm. What kind of taste did him making that one-time switch to the Mexican national team, what kind of taste does that leave in their mouths? Because that's, you know, yeah, it absolutely was his decision. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, the decision was his to make, and he made it. So we make our decisions and we move on. But my interest is the reaction. Do you know what I mean? I think
I think we'll definitely see by the way that he's playing. You know, obviously the way that the players are playing against him, his reaction and all that, I think that's going to be the one circling point to say regarding this player.
Mm-hmm. Right. So let me see if I can get Eric back in here again. We'll give it a shot. I did message him to see if he was available and ready to go. So, you know, you got to remember, Rob, he's about 3 hours behind us, so it's still 4 o'clock.
Lucky.
Hey. Lucky. There.
Hi, is this Eric?
Yes, it is. You guys are live, are you?
Yeah, we are live. How are you?
Oh, good God. All right, give me 2 minutes to make sure I don't get bombarded by the kids. It's just for some reason I had it in my head it was 7:30, so not 7:15.
Yeah, no problem, man. We don't mind the extra entertainment, trust me. So,
okay, no problem. Then let me just warn my family. I'll be back in 1 minute. Bye.
No problem. All right, so we're going to give Eric another second here so we can take care of things. And very excited about, you know, especially – to get his perspective on all of the U.S. men's national team stuff, you know, especially, you know, given the election and everything that happened there. Very excited to, you know, to at least discuss these things with him. So, and also, you know, the tough questions. I think we're going to get to those as well, Rob. So,
absolutely. But the one thing to mention as well, I guess we could also mention the Argentina win today, the other day against Guatemala. You saw a few new players score on their debuts.
Yeah. We definitely, you know, I'm sorry.
All right, guys, I'm back.
Fantastic. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, definitely. So Eric, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back on with us. And like I said, if the kids jump in and you know, raise hell, that's okay. We love that stuff. So.
No, I got it handled. Mom is sick and everybody out, and we should be all right. We're only dealing with the older ones, not the younger ones. So we should be in.
There you go.
In pretty good shape.
So let's jump into it, because the one question that crossed my mind watching the U.S. men playing Brazil the other night is it's been 11 months since Bruce Arena stepped down, and since then we haven't elected a new president. We've elected a new president. We've elected a new GM and Ernie Stewart as well. But what the hell is taking so long to appoint a permanent head coach?
Well, you know, look, it's a fair point. I think, you know, on numerous occasions when people were asking about, you know, where do we go from here? I think that was a lot of the sentiment was that we were going to have to change gears here, change direction, figure out where, you know, where are we going? And I just think that one of the things that I reiterated on numerous occasions is that whoever the president was, they needed to get on that task immediately. Dave Sarokin, God bless him. The guy's great. I've known him for years. He's not a head coach of a national team. He's been kind of just holding down the fort for a while here. And we're losing time. You know, it's just the sand is slipping into the hourglass, and they're you know, basically saying, oh, we got to go through our process. We have to figure out who actually qualifies for this job. Ernie's probably haven't been as straightforward as he doesn't need to be, but I think that what he's alluded to is that he's spoken to a few people, but he hasn't really gone through a formal interview process. I still think we're way behind the ball here. We are not on the ball. We should have been thinking about this for a while and had at least a direction. So, yeah, to your point, I'm frustrated with it. I think our younger players, especially the group that we saw the other night, are just kind of, you know, in purgatory right now. We got to figure this out. So, yeah. Hopefully there'll be a decision made in the near future, and the selection process is further along than we think, and we'll be on a different calendar pretty soon here.
Now I know Rob has some questions about that next head coach, but I want to look at Dave Sarokin real quick, because like you had mentioned, you know, ever since taking over against Portugal, he's posted a record of 2 wins, 3 draws, and 2 losses, and for the most part, he's fielded a youth squad, or at least he's playing the kids, which I think for me is a step in the right direction. How would you rate his job so far? And all things being equal, does he even have a chance of being the permanent head coach?
No, he doesn't. Only because of the magnitude of the job now. I mean, we've just failed to qualify, and it's not his fault. It's just that they're going to try and look for a high profile guy that would fit this criteria that we don't know what it is. But I'm sure Dave Sarokin doesn't fit it. I do think that you know, maybe giving them a shot at the Olympic squad, that might be their thinking. No one's really said that out loud, but you know, it would be very smart of the Federation to try and leverage the ability to get those players together and try and go through this qualification process for the Olympics. And by qualifying for the Olympics, this would be a tournament that our younger players would actually get let's see what they're made of. So I would hope that this would be a good time for collectively us to figure out a way to work together to make sure that we can get some of these players called in when we can and build a team around the Olympic effort. Because if we do that, we've got a realistic shot at building a squad. And maybe Sarokin will be a part of that. So maybe that's the thinking of him sticking around as long as he has. But it would. I don't think he has a shot at the job. I do think that he has been a great soldier, though. He really has. You know, he stuck in there, and he didn't bail out. He did get his opportunity to coach the U.S. national team for a brief stint. As it may, that he knew that he was never going to have the job permanently. It's still. I think he represented himself well, and I think the players appreciate that.
And I think, Eric, you know, you look at the possibilities of the new manager. Obviously, you know, Sarokin has done a wonderful job, I think, to try to get this youth in sort of a, you know, I guess a purgatory status, as Joe alluded. I mean, certainly, it's been a bit frustrating to see, you know, other teams trying to snap up good coaches. One perfect example, at least from a manager that many fans and many people involved in soccer in the United States wanted to get, was Juan Carlos Osorio, who was hired by Paraguay just a couple days ago. You know, certainly that, I think, is a big miss for the United States to try to get a manager. There have been rumors about getting managers like Greg Berhalter, even someone more in MLS, even to the extent of a rumor of David Moyes at one point. I mean, you know, how big of a miss was this for the United States to not get a manager like Juan Carlos Osorio, especially given the fact that he was a manager that was obviously familiar with American soccer, given his time at MLS?
I know him really well. I've known him for years. I'm not entirely sure that he would be interested in the position. I know that must have been on somebody's list at some point. I don't think it's a huge miss. I think that yeah, he would have been on the list, and it would have been a process to see, you know, what direction we really are going. You know, Ernie has, you know, strong ties to Europe,
clearly. Holland, I know he's spoken to the likes of people like Ronald de Boer and people along those lines. You know, who knows? At this point, they're staying so secretive, it's hard to figure out. But, you know, Juan Carlos Osorio, he just went through a pretty dramatic, which is always dramatic, with Mexico. It's the hardest job in the world. They're the most impatient country when it comes to results. And they develop convenient amnesia when you lose one game. It's like, what about the last eight? We did all right. You know, but they still want to find a reason to critique the manager. Or he changed the lineup too many times, or somebody had a favorite in the papers. And the media was really pushing things one direction or the other. So it's a hard job. So, I mean, it took a lot out of him. I got to be honest, the last time I saw him, I felt like he was tired. He really got beaten up a little bit by the job. And he's always been a guy that brings a lot of energy into any work. That he used to go watch his training sessions in Chicago. It was like the damn circus. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like apparatuses you had to jump over, and players were always, you know, on edge. And I didn't see that in him recently. I feel like he got beat up a little bit, so he would be very hesitant to take a job immediately when it came to the United States. I think the other project, if you will, in Paraguay is something that keep it a little bit more familiar, a lot less pressure, and, you know, maybe just really get to dig in and have some fun with the position. I don't think anybody that takes a U.S. national team head coaching or managerial position at this point would consider that a fun job. It's a lot to rebuild. It's a lot of work.
Now, of course, you know, that is the big question, I think, that many people around here are circulating. I mean, certainly, you know, there had been rumors as well as a manager like Tata Martino, who I don't believe is going to be able to be being the head coach of this job. But, you know, Eric, I mean, if there was a short list that you had to pick, or at least one clear favorite that you would like to see manage this United States national team, who is it or who are they that you would love to be seeing on that short list?
Well, I mean, you have to be a part of it. It's a process. I mean, I know that Greg Berhalter would be, you know, on a lot of people's list because, you know, there's a certain familiarity there. I know Greg. I know that his players appreciate his work. I remember sitting with him after a loss in Kansas City and just how much he puts into it and how devastated he was with just an MLS loss, which is unique. I think he had a career that would allow him to have, maybe fill into a better criteria than maybe someone like Jesse Marsh, who's never played abroad, so he doesn't really understand that. He's getting his first taste of Europe now as a manager, which is a great accomplishment, but that learning curve is pretty steep. That won't be the case with Greg. You know, from his time not only in Scandinavia, but also as a player, he has a better full grasp of a lot of the things that it takes to be a U.S. Head coach. So an understanding how, you know, those relationships that you have to have with each club. And we're seeing this now with Christian Pulisic. You handle it wrong, and then the next thing, you know, the kid's sitting out like 8-9 games in a row. He's probably pissed that he didn't reconsider with Croatia going all the way to the final. But I think it's a hard job. You know, do we want to stay American? Do we feel that we need to go abroad again? You know, there's people that I've always had appreciation for, whether it be like the Michael Laudrups of the world, but they're hard to deal with. So you start to really dig in, and when you have those conversations through an interview process, you figure out how much that manager and how much control they're going to want. We're going to be a little bit gun shy with that because Jurgen wanted full control. And he's kind of set a precedent here now, because he came in and said, I need to control this, that, and the other. And then when there was some pushback, especially with the Olympic team, you know, when Caleb got the job and, you know, nobody knew this, but Jurgen Klinsmann quit for a day and said, basically, you know, we're violating my contract. I don't want him to be the coach. And then Andy Herzog came in later and was a failure as well. So there was a lot of things that went into it, but it was all about how much control they want. And those are conversations that scratch a lot of people off the list immediately. So it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how Cordero handles it. I think he wants to stay out of it because, I mean, he really doesn't know a whole lot about the game. I'm just going to leave this to Ernie. So, you know, Ernie will
will talk to his friends in Holland. He'll talk to his friends in Europe. And he's been back in the States long enough at his job at Philadelphia that he's rubbed shoulders with just about everybody that he can to to make a qualified decision. So we'll see how it pans out. I don't really have anybody, you know, on the tip of my tongue. I don't understand why someone like Carlos Quiroz hasn't been brought up. Mm. That's the one name that I'm wondering why. Was another guy that was a coach in the United States, has done fantastic things with Iran and Portugal, was Sir Alex Ferguson's right-hand man. And I've never heard his name come up once. So that's someone like that. If I were in Ernie's position, I'd get on the horn and say, hey, how can we meet? Let's get a dinner, let's have a few glasses of wine and see where your head's at. That might be because you never get, you know, Tata Martino is another great example. I know that other countries have courted him. So yep. And Tata's probably the nicest man you'll ever meet. He's just a genuine, you know, he's a gentleman. And I he's getting his first taste of how things work in America, so that would be another interesting conversation to see if he would even be interested in the position. But it's a different job, guys. You got to understand,
yep.
There's a lot of people like the Jose Mourinhos of the world don't ever want to coach a country because they don't get to work enough.
Yep.
Jurgen Klinsmann went nuts. He was... You looked at the calendar, and I think I did this on one occasion in my days at Fox, and what I realized is that Jurgen Klinsmann on an annual calendar only had his players for 104 days, and he tried to cram it all in when he did have them. That's a hard, and you're sitting on your butt for 250, wondering, you know, thinking about the job, you know, and that makes it very unique. So, you know, Jose Mourinho just wants to be day in, day out work of it. That's why he's always going to stay with the club. It's a unique position when you take, you know, when you take this kind of job, you wonder, you probably second guess yourself. I mean, I know Martinez in England, they like to call him Martinez, but it's Martinez. he took the Belgian job, and that I thought he was going to be pursued by the United States, but clearly he took a job too quick. So he was off the list.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a different environment when you're dealing with day-to-day, and obviously, in this case, month-to-month, being a manager. I mean, yeah, it's a different scenario, and this is why, you know, fans need to really stop and think that, you know, you can't get these Mourinhos, you can't get these Guardiolas, because, you know, they don't want it. They don't want to work in that type of environment. I think that's why, you know, it's so hard to get such a manager like that, you know, and with all due respect to Tata Martino, he had the experience. You know, we saw that with Barcelona, we saw that with Argentina, and we're seeing that with Atlanta. So I think that would have been a great choice to get, you know, if it was the case, but we're just gonna have to wait and see, like you said, Eric. But obviously, you know, you mentioned Christian Pulisic, and I think now for this big new generation, I think all eyes are on him. Obviously, he didn't participate, as you said, in these friendlies and in a lot of these friendlies so far this year. So I guess I'll ask you this. I mean, you know, do you feel that with all the talent coming up here, at least, you know, with the significant amount of players that are playing, you know, in Europe, you know, you look at the likes of Timothy Weah at PSG, Weston McKennie at Schalke, you look at Shaq Moore playing in Spain, Matt Miazga at Nantes, and many of DeAndre Yedlin at Newcastle. Do you feel that pressure for Pulisic just goes slightly more down than before, given the fact that, you know, many people touted him as that big hope of carrying the United States on its shoulders for such a big task now to qualify for the World Cup in 2022? Do you feel that pressure has now been slightly more, you know, relaxed in that sense?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I never thought it was fair to put that kind of pressure on him. I remember the game, I was in Orlando for the Panama game, the big win, the 4-0 win, and, you know, everybody was pretty relaxed, and, you know, I saw Christian at breakfast, and you know, he was just laser-focused, and you could tell, there was just everybody wanted a piece of him. I mean, the kid couldn't move through the lobby without, you know, just people that wanted an autograph or family, and he was getting pulled in a lot of different directions. And you could tell that heavy agents and the sponsors, and it was all kind of, it was just maybe kind of new to him because, you know, when you play in Germany, you do get your time away. I mean, the fans are extremely respectful. And I felt like in those moments, he was just, you know, almost to the point of just leave me alone, you know, and he's not that kind of kid. He's a really nice kid, but, you know, watching him try to eat breakfast with a friend and have to stand up five times and get his picture taken, and just all of that. It was, we were all so excited about him. And I think with this new wave of players, I mean, it does take pressure off. I think it's going to be about the team. I think that will be the message and the narrative to try and say, look, we got some other guys on this team that can pull the weight as well. So, you know, make it a team effort. I mean, I really was impressed with Miazga the other night. I really was. I mean, they were beating him up for the Firmino goal, but I mean, just quicker feet than people think, better pass than people think. Stays in it, doesn't dive in a whole lot. You know, the first goal we got beat on a, you know, just you get sidestepped by these guys and they'll beat you, and it was a great pass. But you know, and the second goal was total BS, and I think we're all pretty clean on that. There wasn't a penalty, whether Will Trout didn't touch him or not. I wish Stu Holden would have just said it. It's not a penalty. It's a dive. Should have been a yellow card. But you know, I think to take a loss the way that they did. I tweeted out that, you know, a couple of days before, I said we're not going to learn anything from the Brazil game, but I was wrong. I learned a lot about that group. They've got some quality that in all positions that it'll take a whole lot of pressure off of Christian.
Yeah, you know, just to jump in on that, it was really more of the inexperience, especially when you look back on the Firmino goal. I don't really pin much of that on Matt Miazga so much as I do on Anthony Robinson on the wing getting kind of just over pursuing Douglas Costa just by a step, and it was enough for a player of Douglas Costa's quality to really just get that step beyond him, and he laid a picture perfect pass. I mean, let's make sure we recognize that it wasn't just some ball that he flubbed into the box. I mean, that ball had pace, it had venom, and it was perfect, and it had to be for Firmino to get on the other end of it. So
look, Douglas Costa does that to the best defenders on the world on a weekly basis. We shouldn't feel bad about the play at all.
No, God,
and that's
no.
That's my point. I think that to your point, yeah, it was one of those plays that you got beat, and they put three things together that were unbeatable. And look, Firmino's finish was pretty class too. So look. Those kind of things happen. You live and you learn. You move on. But you know that's a world class player that beat you, not just some schmo.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So, you know, I wanted to go back to the U.S. men's head coach questions real quick. I wanted to ask you quickly, not necessarily for a name, Eric, but more of a style. You know, I've always argued on this show that I feel like sometimes the coaching staffs that we've seen over the past few years tend to ignore that South American, that Latin American type of influence that we do have in our game. And for me, I feel like we can't ignore that piece of what's inside of us. So for me, what kind of style coach do you want to see step in at the helm at the U.S. men's national team?
Well, I mean, look, I've always been in favor of assessing the team and figuring out, you know, especially with the national team. The national team is forced friendship at best. I mean, it's always a scenario where a lot of these selections have been made on performance and pressure on the coach to pick players that maybe the media loves, or they've just proven it. They earned it. Their stats are there. You got to put them on the field. But if you take what we're seeing out of Tyler Adams, I mean, you look at McKinney, right? I think that those guys have the ability to certainly be two-way players. They're not going to they're really not going to get beat too much on the turn, and they can get involved in the play. They're not getting a lot out of Kellen Acosta lately, but with Pulisic, with Weah, you have a team there, and they're the ones that force the philosophy. It's and this is really where, you know, when you know, and times when I've coached or managed, and I've coached, you know, lower division teams, clearly. But I've put together lower division teams that will beat any MLS team. And we've proven that on time and time again, because of what you're saying, is that you do have a certain style. You have to embrace it. The players dictate that. They're the ones that you have to assess them and then put the pieces together. In the past, we've always tried to force the issue or force a certain way of playing down their throat. And, you know, we get married to it. Oh, it's got to be a 3-4-3 or it's a 4-4-2 or no, it really is. When you look at the better teams in the world, they're playing off of each other, and they've certain games are different, and you have to have the ability to not change the style of play, but just the formation a little bit. look, whether we like it or not, all we know is in the last 8 years, in the middle of the park, Michael Bradley was there. And no matter what happened, even when Bob was the coach, or it didn't matter if Jurgen was the coach, or even Bruce for that matter, he wasn't coming off. You know, I made the argument that I think Michael Bradley's a great soccer player, but there were certain games that just weren't really tailor-made for him. And we could have changed it up. We could have had a different style of play where we didn't feel it, you know, necessary to always play the same guys. Mm-hmm. And so we now have the opportunity to kind of, you know, mutate out of that. And I think that some of these younger players, some of them I just already mentioned, they've recognized that this might be a really good opportunity to show personality, to get the ball and show us what you have. It's always unique to me. I've coached with Bruce, I've coached with Bob, and you know, when you get those young impressionable players that come into a national team, it's really funny to watch them react. It's not funny. It's actually interesting to watch them react, and you know how they really embrace their role, but they also figure out how to be themselves. That's what I'm really hoping we find. We need a manager for this team that recognizes not just their abilities, but their character and their personality, and he allows them to express themselves. If we can do that, if we find that person who's going to connect with his players and to have an understanding to make sure that, you know, some of these guys, you know, they don't pout if they don't get the start. They're still a part of a big unit, we're gonna be so good. We're gonna be so good if we figure that out. So it's a unique time. I think that we do have some really talented guys. They're all in good spots too. They're not just they're fighting for their positions wherever they are. I mean, I wasn't happy with the Kellen Acosta trade to Colorado at all. I think that there might have been a better address for him, but. As a whole, I think this group is pretty interesting. I think they've got a ton of potential, and we really only saw the group that we'd wanted to see play against one of the better teams in the world. Let's see how they play in a different game and see how they react to that. It'll be interesting. I mean, even going back to that silly France game, you know, it's really not a real game, but it's still something to build off. And I think that this group, if they can get more time on the field. And to be honest, to get more lunches and dinners together. That's, believe it or not, guys, that's so important. It's so important for our players to know each other. So when they go into battle and they go into war, they're fighting for each other. That's a big part of what being on the national team is all about. So, you know, I think it's a unique time. I think the next 6 to 8 months we'll know a lot more about our guys, and we'll probably be in a better spot, you know, coming in the first part of next year.
No doubt about it. You know, especially like you said, they are a band of brothers. So it's just as important, you know, rooming with a particular guy, having breakfast or having lunch on game day, something like that. I think those things go much further in terms of making a team, a true team aspect, than just, you know, putting a ball on the pitch and just running around for 90 minutes. I think it's all of it that really builds that character between players and that relationship, and I think that goes a long, long way. And so, one more question before I let you go. And again,
playing on the national team is not easy, guys. It's not.
No.
It's whether it's in the 90s or now, it's never easy, and there's pressure. But, you know, when you have a group that not just has an understanding of what they individually bring to the table, but they have a better understanding of the players around them and their quality and what they can and can't do. I mean, it's okay to admit that. I mean, you're not going to play certain guys into space, and you're not going to play certain guys to their feet in tight spaces because they can't do it. So you learn, and you become a better team when you start playing to your strengths. So.
Right,
exactly. I know you have another question. Sorry.
Yeah, I do. My last question before we let you go, and again, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a while since you've been on Sirius XM with Winalda Talks Football. I just want to know, do you miss the radio aspect? I know you're still doing television, but do you miss the banter and the radio aspect of talking football?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I'm pretty much out of TV. I made that decision prior to the election. I think that... just to be totally blunt, is I don't like what TV has become, especially when you work for Fox, because you are partnered with Major League Soccer and you were partnered with U.S. Soccer. So anything you say that is negative is puts you in harm's way. And so you really feel like it's more than just a strainer. It's you're fully you're a mouthpiece, and I didn't appreciate that on television. I didn't feel that was a spot for me. But I miss radio like crazy. That was the best. I think that we had so much fun at WTF. Even when the time when we had a caller who was on the 101 freeway, and I gave him instructions to my, because I knew who the guy was. I had never met him personally. Yeah. People thought I was crazy, but I was doing the show out of my house because we had the studio in the house. And I gave him directions to my home and told him to turn left, get a beer, and come on up. And I just missed that. I mean, I missed, like, really, you know, bonding with just people who love the game. They have questions. They want to talk about it, but they clearly have a passion. We've never seen this much interest in the game. And radio was the free forum. It was the ability to really dive into to topics and to talk about it. You know, TV is – They're cut to Eric. You got 15 seconds. Go, and when you work with Alexi Lalas, it's usually about five. So you really don't get to get your point across a lot. And radio was a lot more fun for me.
I swear to you, I thought there were times, you know, not, and you didn't see it this World Cup, but I think during the Copa America broadcast, where I thought Fernando Fiore was just going to reach across and punch Alexi in the face. and there was a part of me that was actually hoping it would happen, but I'm telling you.
No, I know what Alexi's doing. He's not fooling anybody. Yeah. He's saying things that are to get underneath your skin. He's trying to build his brand, and he's cooperating with the corporates. You know, so it is what it is. I mean, do I respect it? Not entirely. Do I understand it completely?
Definitely.
But it is what it is.
Well, for one, I'm hoping to hear you back on the radio sometime soon because it was fantastic to listen to the show at night driving around. So, Eric, best of luck with everything, and thank you for coming on tonight. And hopefully we'll get to have you back again sometime soon.
Yeah, let's make it soon. Like, it's been a couple of years, so let's figure it out. We'll
get it again. Amen. Definitely. I'll reach out, and we'll definitely get you much, much sooner, man. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Right, okay.
Good night.
My pleasure.
And that was the great Eric Winalda. Great to catch up with him and talk U.S. Men's National Team. He's got such a unique view of everything, Rob, right? Because, I mean...
I think because he's been through it all, basically. I think that's where you get all that analysis. And really, you know, you kind of look at the points he's trying to make about literally everything. And I think just because he was in those situations, you know, be it as a player or coach or an analysis on TV or working in U.S. soccer, I mean, it all goes in together. It all comes full circle, and I understand and I fully respect it.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, one thing that I picked up on in the interview where he's kind of shaped my view a little bit is when I asked him about what style should the next coach have, and he brings up a great point. It's not so much a style thing, right? It's about the right person to be able to come in, and when you only get these kids for X amount of time, to be able to blend the characteristics and allowing these kids to play freely at the national team level and really get the best out of them from that perspective. You know, I never really looked at the situation in that way. And he's opened my eyes out a little bit. Maybe Tata's not the right choice, you know, or somebody that I've been kind of, yeah, let's get Tata, let's get Osorio. Maybe he's not the right choice, and I don't know who the right choice is right now. I'm going to go out there and just say I don't know who the right choice is, but I think it is somebody that needs to be able to not necessarily coddle these kids, because let's remember, Rob, a lot of these kids are playing over at big clubs in Europe right now, so I don't think they need coddling. I think they need room to grow. And I think finding the right coach, especially a coach that is good with youth. Sadly, I think of one right now off the top of my head, but he's going to be way, way too expensive to come on board, is a guy like Zinedine Zidane. You know, think about what he did with Real Madrid, but you know, before he moved into the first team.
Yep.
You know, that's a guy that's kind of the first name that all of a sudden clicks in my head. But he might be the right guy, but I think he's a little too pricey. Or he would be too pricey. But you never know. It'd be one hell of a challenge, right?
It would definitely be.
Yeah, so let's jump into a couple of things. Rob, I know we talked about the UEFA Nations League. a few minutes ago. We did, you know, I want you to touch on for just a minute. Juan Carlos Osorio had his press conference as Paraguayan head coach.
Yep.
What were your thoughts out of his presser?
For me, it sounded like a gentleman. Okay, and what I was able to hear the entire press conference. Obviously, he did mention the fact that he was familiar with Paraguayan football soccer. In the way that he obviously played with Paraguayans. I think one interesting story that, you know, I said on the thread, or at least in the quotes that I made just before the show, is that, you know, when he was in the late 80s, when he came to the United States as an illegal immigrant, you know, he played in the Paraguayan League in New York, which is like basically the Sunday League amateur league that most countries, or at least the, you know, immigrants do in this country to, you know, try to form unity and try to, you know, find a good bond in this. So certainly, that's the one thing that I took in mind. But I think I liked the one thing that I really stood out to me, and this is the big one that I think Colombia and the United States missed out, is, you know, the fact that he's not here to change the idea of Paraguayan soccer. You know, he's trying to take advantage of it. He's trying to get the advantages that, you know, that they've lived across on for so many years. And, you know, the fact that he wants to reach to the youth, he feels that he wants the contact. One thing that he said, that he wants the contact. He wants consistent contact with the managers of the youth teams, be it U20, U17, because he wants to see the best, you know, the best that are playing outside of Paraguay, the best that are playing in Paraguay, but also the best youngsters that are coming up that could be a part of that process and get that good mix that, you know, we've been accustomed, that we, you know, you see in most successful teams, getting the best, not just experience, but also the mix of youth, you know, that raw talent that you sort of get and try to develop from there. I think that's the one thing that I really was easily impressed by him, you know, and I'm confident in him. I think that obviously the task will be tough for him to deal with, given the qualifiers in general in South America, you know, coaches coming into new national teams. Obviously, we saw the replacement of we're going to talk about this later. We saw Peckerman leaving, so we got to see what Colombia is going to be doing. You know, you see Ecuador getting a new coach in Hernan Darío. I forgot his name real quick. Hernan Darío Gómez, yep, the former Panama coach. We saw Reynaldo Rueda being the new coach of Chile. You know, Argentina, we're going to have to see what they do, what happens there. But, you know, teams are getting stronger. You know, we saw Gareca staying at a Peru, Uruguay being strong as well with their, hopefully their new coach, should Tavares not stay. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough, but I think the mentality and I think the intelligence that Osorio brings, and, you know, you kind of saw that. We saw what he was able to do with Mexico. And, you know, as Eric hinted, you know, it's obviously a tough task to be a manager in Mexico. You're under so much pressure under the microscope that I feel that in Paraguay, that while you will be under pressure, I think now he'll be much more relaxed to actually fully get the message that he's trying to get. And he's a pragmatic man. I was looking at a few things of his background. He's a really intelligent man, and I think that for many people, I think this is a good case for the national team moving forward.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you brought up Peckerman real quick. Obviously, you know, something that happened last week was that he had stepped down to Colombia. Do you see him jumping back onto another side? Or, you know, I believe he's in his mid-60s, if I remember correctly, Rob. I mean, is this something where he's going to go coach another team, or do you think he's kind of done with it and this is kind of his retirement?
69. He turned 69 just last week.
Yeah, I got to imagine that he's, you know, he's done, right?
I think at that age, I'd call it quits. I mean, he's done everything he could. He did the national team in Argentina. That was the big rumor that he gets. But I would not want a man like him, or at least, you know, given the fact that he's, you know, I want to say fragile, but certainly at that age, that, you know, you're going to be under constant pressure as the manager of such a really polarizing national team like Argentina. I would definitely don't want him to be in that scenario. But I think Peckerman's done what he needed to do. I mean, he achieved something in Colombia that he never did, that Colombia never done ever. I mean, two consecutive World Cups, greatest performance in a World Cup ever. I think he's done what he had to do in Colombia, and I think that Colombia should be grateful for everything that he did there. So for me, I mean, if I'm Peckerman, I'm calling it quits. I'm retiring.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's move on. Because we're running out of time here. Let's get you up to speed on the matches to watch this week. Starting on Tuesday, tomorrow afternoon, you've got the Nations League against Spain-Croatia, Rob. Should be a fantastic tie. That's Tuesday, 2:45 p.m. And then tomorrow night, obviously, the big one, USA-Mexico, Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. And then we get back to league action, Rob, starting with I'm going to dub this one definitely our match of the week. Tottenham Hotspur-Liverpool, Saturday, 7:30 a.m. Set your alarm clocks. All these times are Eastern. In the Bundesliga, we've got Wolfsburg-Hertha Berlin on Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Then in La Liga, we have Real Sociedad-Barcelona Saturday, 10:15 a.m. Then in Ligue 1, at 2 o'clock on Saturday, we have Toulouse-Monaco. Monaco right now, I believe, winless in their last three matches, Rob. They've, you know, certainly off on the wrong foot this particular season. Then we hit the MLS, where we've got a battle of playoff teams in Vancouver Whitecaps, Seattle Sounders. It's a Cascadia Cup match. You know, obviously two teams trying to make the playoffs. News of the LA Galaxy with Siggy Schmidt stepping down today. They've got them hot on their tail. This is going to be certainly a struggle. So the Vancouver Whitecaps, Seattle Sounders, Saturday, 10 p.m. And then on Sunday, in the Serie A, we have Juventus at home to Sassuolo Sunday at 9 a.m. Those are the matches to keep an eye out for this week. Which one are you most interested in, Rob? Probably the Spurs-Liverpool one, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting game to see how well these teams, you know, obviously it's still early in the season, but I think what the Spurs are trying to do, what Liverpool are trying to do, I think we could definitely see those two teams really contend Manchester City and Chelsea for this title.
No doubt about it. So, Rob, let's get back to the trivia question real quick. And I had asked it earlier tonight. Eric Winalda, who was our guest tonight, was elected to the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in 2004. Who was he inducted with? I gave you a couple of hints. It is two men and one woman in addition to Eric. So it's four people total if you count Eric. One of them was the captain in World Cup qualifiers in 1990 for the men. And like I said, two men and one woman. So do you have any? You want to take a couple of cracks?
I guess I'll try with the captain one. Is it Peter Vermes?
No, it's not. I'd have to look. You know, I should have called up the list of when people were elected to the Hall of Fame just to give you, when you give me a name, I'll give you what year they were elected. So, but it's not Peter Vermes. I'll give you one more hint for the woman.
Yeah.
She is considered one of the top women U.S. soccer players of all time.
Mia Hamm?
No, it's not Mia Hamm. That would have been the other. That would have been my first shot at it with that hint.
But, oh, yeah, Christine Lilly.
No. I would have given you she's from Connecticut on that one.
Christine Lilly is from Connecticut,
isn't she? Yeah, but this person is not.
Ha. Michelle Akers?
Michelle Akers was inducted to the U.S. Hall of Fame, U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in 2004. So you've got the two men. Want me to just give it to you? Or?
Captain. That's the one thing I don't know.
And you know, that's the thing. As I give you that hint, and I think that makes it even harder.
Yeah, because I don't remember 1990. I wasn't born, so I don't know. I mean, I know history, but I don't know that far.
No, that's fine.
I'm sorry.
No problem. So Eric Winalda was elected to the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in 2004. He was inducted with three other people. Michelle Akers, who was the women player. The captain of the World Cup qualifiers in 1990 is a player by the name of Mike Windischmann. Mm-hmm. And the last one, a name that I'm sure you will recognize, Mr. Paul Caligiuri.
Yep, absolutely. Scored that goal against Trinidad and Tobago.
Exactly. Those are your four players elected to the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in 2004. So tonight's trivia answer. Rob, without anything else left on the docket, let's hit the old closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. So we'll get this baby fired up here and rolling. And again, for episode 216 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Eric Winalda for joining us tonight. Next week, we're going to get back to league action. We're going to start looking at the Champions League and Europa League matchups as they are right around the corner and bring you more talk on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. So for episode 216 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.